So this evening, we're going to examine Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 66, which is called by the Acharyas Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vidyabhusan as the Charan Shloki, or the pinnacle, the peak, the topmost point of Bhagavad Gita, where all instructions finally culminate, where Krishna is giving his ultimate instruction to Arjuna, which, as we will learn, in this instruction, Krishna is actually, in a sense, negating many things that he has said before in the Bhagavad Gita. In a sense. So we shall read now the verse. Sarva dharmam prityaja mamikam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mukshayishami masuchaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Now we shall examine some of the statements from Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, "Now in Singh Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna." So here's some notes. There are two paths to Krishna consciousness given in the Bhagavad Gita. One is the path of gradual elevation by knowledge, and the other is the path of immediate, unconditional surrender. In Bhagavad Gita 18:66, Sri Krishna declares that the path of unconditional surrender is the best, for in this way one attains all perfection without separate effort. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. "First of all, one becomes Jnanavan. Then he surrenders to Vasudev. And then, Sarva Dharma Parityaja Mamikam Sharanam Braja. This is one process. Another process is you become a devotee of Vasudev, then Jnana Vairagya will automatically come." So, Srila Prabhupada is here giving an example from two verses in Bhagavad Gita. One is, of course, this Charan Shloki. The other one is, who knows? Or Srila Prabhupada uses the word Jnanavan. Yes. Bahunam janmanamante Jnanavam mam prapadyante Vasudeva savamiti sa mahatma sadurlabha. Here Krishna says, after many, many, many births, a wise man who has become thoroughly versed in Vedic philosophy, Vedic conclusions, Vedanta, and has come to understand that Krishna is the absolute truth, then he knows Vasudeva Savamiti. He knows that Vasudeva Krishna is everything. So Sa Mahatma Sadulava, such a great soul is very rare to find. So this is one method or one process that is given by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. As Krishna himself says, it takes many, many births. This is the process that we've been speaking of, the Vedantic process we've been speaking of in the last few days, to become Buddha, to become wise, by thorough study of the Vedas, by engaging in auspicious Vedic activities which purify the soul, in this way gradually becoming elevated to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And then Krishna says on that platform, what is it? Brahma-Bhuta prasanatma, what is the last line? Madbhakta labdha. Yes. Yes. Then at that point, devotional service, bhakti, become it's a natural step. A natural step for a wise man who understands that Krishna is the absolute truth, understands that I am Krishna's parts and parcel, by my constitutional position I am his servant. So then it's natural for him to engage in service. But all the preliminary, you see, preliminary process of coming to that point of self and God realization takes a long, long time. But in this verse, 1866, Krishna is saying you can just surrender to me immediately without any qualification. So we will go on. Here's a quote from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text 19, which says, although not having fully realized Krishna, persons who have even once surrendered completely unto his lotus feet and who have become attracted to his name, form, qualities, and pastimes are completely freed of all sinful reactions. For they have thus accepted the true method of atonement. Even in dreams, such surrendered souls do not see Yamaraj or his order carriers, who are equipped with ropes to bind the sinful. This is a very clear statement. Krishna says in this verse that I will protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So here it is said, even one may not be a fully realized devotee. He may not have fully realized Krishna. But if he is sincerely surrendered to Krishna, then he will not even see the Yamadutas in dreams. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text 19. Another point. To surrender to Krishna, even before having realized him, is itself the superior path of knowledge, because Krishna is the goal of all cultivation of knowledge. One who simply surrenders to Krishna begins his spiritual life at the point of full knowledge. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. Therefore the whole world is confused. They do not know where to repose the love. That they do not know. Therefore Krishna is canvassing. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam. Come here, love me. Increase your attachment for me. Everything will be all right. Otherwise it is simply vague. Shramahiva kevalam, simply waste of time. Dharmas vanustita pungsang vishvakshena katasuya. It is simply a waste of time. Now this is a very deep point that Srila Prabhupada is making here. He's speaking of vague religious systems which promote sub-religious principles such as mercy, kindness, cleanliness, austerity, so on and so forth. Charity. So all over the world there are religious systems which do not actually aim one at God. God as Krishna, the Supreme Personality. And there may be some information, you know, there God is there mentioned. But God, what does that mean? You see, the word God in the European languages, there are many languages that have, just like in English, God and German, Gott. I guess in the Dutch language it must be something like that. Gott, yes. So these are all connected to, this is all related, these words are related with the word good. God and good, they have the same etymological origin. So by using this word God, all that's being said is that God is good, you know, he's all right, he's okay. It doesn't say much more than that. This is by no means a personal address of the Supreme Lord. It's just indicating his status as being the best, very good. Or, you know, Allah, I think, means the all-merciful. All-merciful, I think. The greatest?
Merciful, no.
Okay, anyway. Allah is some other, you know, vague quality. And I think it's Al-Rahim, which means all merciful.
Allah means God.
Yeah, the God.
In Hebrew. Allah Wakba means God the Great.
God the Great.
Allah Wahim, Allah Uttaratam. 99 names.
So anyway, there are such names which just indicate some vague quality of God. He's supreme, he's great, he's good. So there's no specific form, specific qualities, specific activities, specific personality who is identified, on whom the devotees of these other religions should meditate. Rather, they're told there's a God, he's good, he's great, and he wants you to follow this and that, you know, 10 commandments or this or that ritualistic behavior. In this way, the idea is you become qualified. Actually, the real idea is, we heard this yesterday, that gradually one becomes qualified to understand God more in the future, some other life, by being pious in this way. But Prabhupada is saying, he's quoting this a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Svanustita Pungsan Vishvakshenu Katasu Yat. This verse is saying that if you're following Dharma and yet Vishvakshenu Katasu Yat Notpad Yadi Ratim, you are not developing Rati. Rati means attraction, a taste for hearing about the personality of Godhead. Just like in some religions, they say that the name of God cannot be heard. You know, you can never say it. It cannot be heard and cannot be pronounced. So, and God's form can never be conceived of. Or they'll just come out and say God has no form. So in this way, they actually negate the personality of Godhead. So what is there any question of attraction or attachment? So Bhagavatam says, you may be nicely following some religious principles, becoming in one sense pious and all of that, pious and purified, but if in the end there's no attachment for the personality of Godhead, then Shramiheva Kevalam, you just wasted all your time. Just a big waste of time.
Like in Judaism, that's what you said, just speak Judaism, that was just a God that is unapproachable, come no form, everything is idol worship. And in the Kabbalah, there are seven spheres, like seven floors. And they believe that if you reincarnate, you only incarnate as Jewish, which is funny. And you can only go two spheres up, that's it. Mm-hmm. Then you bring light to the Goyim. You can only go two spheres up, that's it. That's the mysticism of the Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can become full of light.
Full of
light. To other people, but two spheres up, and that's it. That's it. You can't go further than that.
Dhanadhar Maharaj says, he comes from a Jewish family, and when he was deciding to become a devotee, then his family was very much against it. So they brought in one uncle. He had an uncle who was preaching to him very heavy. And the point he was making is, God, no. Judaism, yes. Forget about God. Just stick to your religion. So this is the point. The religious system which effectively cuts God right out of the picture. God doesn't matter anymore. I've seen also in Christian tracts, fundamentalist Christian tracts, I've seen one which is sort of like a comic book, drawn pictures, with a message that you have to surrender to Jesus. So it showed a man who was born as a Christian, but he didn't take it seriously, engaged in so many sins throughout his life, and then he died. And so then the angels came, the messenger of the Lord came, took him out of the grave, and brought him up to heaven. So then he was brought to the gates of heaven, and sitting outside the gate, there was this huge being with just a circle for a head, you know, a blank circle, no face, no features, which was shining sort of like the sun. This is God. He's sitting outside the gate of heaven. And so you see these souls are being brought before him, and then he's asking an angel, is his name in the book of life? And so for this man, the big book of life was opened, and the angel looked, and they said, Lord, his name is not here. And then God said, then cast him in the lake of fire. And then for those whose name was in the book, God said, all right, you can go. You can enter this gate and enter heaven. Now, this is very interesting. That first of all, God is depicted as a huge faceless being. Now, if you were to actually see such a being, you'd become afraid. That means monster, you see? Some big entity with no eyes, no mouth, no nose. You would become immediately frightened if you saw such a thing. This is their idea of God. And plus, he's sitting at the gate of heaven outside. So the reward is that you walk past God, you see? Your reward is inside. You know, he's just sitting at the gate. You walk past God, and there, you know, you enjoy. So you can see from this what is the position of God in these sort of religions. He's not the goal. God is not the goal. He's just the judge, you know, persons who laughed at you because you were a pious person in this lifetime. You'll have the satisfaction of seeing this terrible God have them thrown into the lake of fire. You can look over the gate of heaven and go, ha ha, ha ha ha. That's all God is for them. So Bhagavatam says, useless waste of time. If rati, if attraction to Krishna, and this is significant that there's a verse which was recited by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya describing the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shikshakam Eka Purusha Purana, which means Lord Chaitanya has come to deliver to the human race that which has been lost for a long time in history. And he mentions three things: Vairagya, real renunciation; Vidya, transcendental knowledge; and Nija Bhakti Yoga. Nija means specific. Bhakti Yoga, we know, devotional service. But Nija means specific. It means Bhakti Yoga not to, you know, God, you know, not to some vague God who's beyond the clouds. As Prabhupada said, they say God is up there somewhere. But when you look, all you see is birds. So not just some vague, nameless God. You're not sure where he is and what he looks like. But Nija Bhakti Yoga, to Krishna. So this is the benediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at this age. So the other processes of Dharma mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita are based upon bhoga, enjoying separately from Krishna, or tyaga, renouncing separately from Krishna. That's the karma, the jnana, the yoga, which anything which falls short. Of course, as I mentioned yesterday, the beauty of the Bhagavad Gita is that when Krishna does explain these other dharmas, he does give the bridge. He always says, finally, you should do this karma yoga for me. Then it becomes bhakti. Karma. Prabhupada in the Krishna book, he indicates certain verses. This one verse, Yajjahosi Yarashnashi. What is that? Yat Jehoshi Yadashnashi. Yat. Huh? We have to look this up. We're going to look it up. Judge. Yat Karoshi. That's it. I forgot. I was thinking of the second line. Yat Karoshi. Yadashnasi. Yaj Jehoshi Dadasi. Yat Tapasyasi Kaunteya. Tat Karusha Madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So here, Srila Prabhupada indicates, Krishna is explaining to the karma yogis, karmis, how to become devotees. Whatever you do, or eat, or offer, or give away, whatever austerities you may perform, just do it for me. And then the last verse of the sixth chapter, the famous verse, about the topmost yogis. That is for the mystic yogis. For the jnanis, we just recited that verse. Bahunam gyanmanamante gyanavamam prapanya. This verse is, these are verses which are indicating those who are karmis, jnanis, yogis, how you can become a devotee also by following your process. So, but anyway, but otherwise, apart from that, apart, if they do not surrender to Krishna, and then these processes, karma, jnana, bhakti, are based upon bhoga, enjoying separately from Krishna, or tyaga, renouncing separately from Krishna. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. Krishna says, sarva dharma parit, you have to give up this bhoga dharma and tyaga dharma. Sarva dharma parityaja. You are now engaged in two kinds of dharma. Somebody, karmis, they are bhoga dharmi. They want to enjoy. And tyagi, they want to renounce this bhoga. So both of these will not help you. Bhoga, tyaga. Then what? Seva. You have to take the dharma of seva. What does seva mean?
Service.
That is bhakti, Krishna seva. For Krishna, you can accept anything. That is, it may appear bhoga. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, Pitu Maharaj, they were kings, very opulent kings. Dhruva Maharaj. So still they were great devotees. Not only ordinary devotees, mahajans. So this bhoga tyaga has no meaning. It has no benefit. One has to become a devotee, either in the bhoga field or the tyaga field. It doesn't matter. Bhoga tyaga is not required. Required is service. So one may serve in opulent settings as a king, utilizing millions and billions of dollars of wealth in Krishna's service. That's not karma. That's not bhoga dharma. That's pure devotional service. If everything cent per cent is engaged in Krishna's service. Another point is unconditional service is the priti purvaka, the method of love, which is vidhi purvaka, the right method, as opposed to avidhi purvaka, which is this avidhi purvaka is described in Bhagavad Gita 9:23. For example of the difference between the two, you can refer to the story of the wives of the brahmanas and their wives in the Krishna book. You know this story, I hope. I think who told it the other day? I think Ayodhipati Prabhu, didn't he? It was just the other morning in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. There were brahmanas who were performing a big yajna and making an offering to so many demigods. Now in Vedic yajna, the ultimate goal is the Purushottama. The Supreme Person. So the Supreme Person, Krishna, and Balaram was in the forest. And when the cowherd boys asked Krishna, we're hungry, Krishna said, go to those Brahmins, because Krishna was thinking, they're in any case offering to me ultimately, so they should be happy to give something of their offerings to myself and my friends. But these brahmanas, they were engaged in this avidhi purvaka, this incorrect method. They were not surrendered to... Their process was avidhi, in that, in spite of all the rituals, they were not specifically surrendered to Krishna or the Supreme Lord. They were interested in making offerings to the demigods, who were parts and parcels of the universal form of the Lord, and getting from them benedictions in return. But they really had no interest in making their offering into devotional service to the Lord. So therefore they thought, why should we give anything to these two cowherd boys in the forest? Who are they? So they just ignored the boys. So this is called avidhi purvakam. Worship, indirect worship. Worshipping demigods and so on and so forth. But their wives, they immediately, when they heard Krishna and Balaram were in the forest, they immediately rushed out of their houses and rendered direct service. So that is vidhi purvakam or priti purvakam, the method of love, which is surrender. Because these wives of the Brahmanas, they gave up all religious principles. Their homes, they left their children, they left their husbands, they left everything to go meet Krishna. And Krishna says, I will protect you, do not fear. The wives, they actually said to Krishna, now we've come here to join you. We can't go back. Our husbands will not accept us. And Krishna said, don't worry. Don't worry. You can go back. There will be no stain on your character. And actually, indeed, when they did go back, the husbands, they saw their wives and they saw how greatly advanced they had become by their meeting with Krishna. They become completely purified of all sins. They were effulgent with all spiritual knowledge. Everything we're hoping that they could attain is they saw their wives had gotten just ones to hell with our chanting of mantras in the fire. What is the use of all this? Yes, what's the use of all this? There's no attraction to Krishna. So here's another point from this purport. In the seventh chapter, it was said that only one who has become free from all sinful reactions can take to the worship of Lord Krishna. Thus one may think that unless he is free from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically freed. There is no need of strenuous effort to free oneself from sinful reactions. So surrendering to Krishna destroys sin at its very roots. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. These four kinds of stages of sinful activities, in stock, almost fructified, manifest, all the stages of sinful activities can be immediately nullified. Because it is assured by Krishna, Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami. It is not imagination. If we believe in the words of Krishna, then there is no question of denying this fact. Krishna personally says, Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha sarva papebhyo, the katasta, palanmukha, parabdha, everything. It becomes immediately nullified simply by this process, by surrendering. So these words, katasta, palanmukha, parabdha, these are three of the four stages. The first is bija. Bija means seeds. So the seeds of sin are in our hearts. Anartha bija. And then when they start to grow, I can give a very clear example. Just like the sexual desire, which is a result of sin, sinful desire seeds stored in the heart. So in a young child, there is no such desire. A young child, 2, 3, 4 years old, does not feel sexual desire. But the seeds are there in the heart. So when the child reaches a certain age, puberty, then kutastha means it begins to develop. Kutastha means like a stalk. When a seed sprouts, it starts to grow. So then, you see, very subtly, a young boy, he doesn't know why, but suddenly he finds girls nice to look at. And the young girls, they find boys nice to look at. You see, it just starts like that. They just start looking and thinking, this is nice. And then it grows more and more. And then palonmukha, then a fruit begins to grow, the fruit of enjoyment. It sprouts, it becomes manifest. And then parabdha means the result of tasting that fruit. So the result of tasting that fruit you hear about in Jayadvaita Maharaj's class. I don't have to talk about that. Anyway, these are the four stages of sin. So, Srila Prabhupada is saying here that by surrendering to Krishna, these four stages are eradicated. So an example, clear example of what this means, we find in Mahabharata, that in the war, in the Kurukshetra war, Sri Krishna, he advised the Pandavas to take unfair means to defeat the Kauravas. So, in this way, the Pandavas, they actually broke the codes of Dharma for the Kshatriyas. For example, it was Krishna who advised Bhima to break the thighs of Duryodhana. at the end. So in a fight between Kshatriyas, one can never strike a blow below the waist. It is considered breaking the rules of Kshatriya fighting. So there was no other way for Bhima to defeat Duryodhana. So Krishna, he indicated on the last day of the fight, Krishna, he slapped his thighs. Actually, Bhima had vowed earlier that he would break the thighs of Duryodhana, because when Draupadi was being harassed after the gambling match, Draupadi was even lost. So, you know, Dushasan was trying to pull off her clothes, and Karna was calling her, you know, saying any woman with five husbands is, she's not a wife, she's a prostitute. And so much abuse was being heaped upon Draupadi. And Duryodhana, he was going like this on his lap. And then Bhima, he jumped up and said, I will break those thighs. So Krishna reminded Bhima many years later by slapping his thigh, break his thigh, you vowed to do this. So this was against Kshatriya Dharma. Another way that Krishna had the Pandavas break the Dharma was in the fight against Grandfather Bhishma, who could not be defeated by anyone because he had the benediction from his father, Maharaj Santanu, that he would die at a time of his own choice. So how could he be defeated? But Grandfather Bhishma had made a vow that he would never fight the warrior Sikandi. So Sikandi was actually Amba in a previous life. Amba was, it's a long story. There were three princesses who were kidnapped by Grandfather Bhishma Vichitravirya, yes, Vichitravirya. And one of them, she had set her heart, Amba had set her heart on another king. So she did not want to marry Vichitravirya. So, but in the rush, the fight of kidnapping, she couldn't. She had no chance to say this. So she was put on the chariot with her two sisters and taken to Hastinapur. And only there she could say, actually, I don't want to marry Vichitravirya. I had my heart set on this other king. So then Grandfather Bhishma said, all right, you can go to that king. But then that king, because Kshatriyas, you know, they have this lion-like quality that they will never accept the spoils. You know, if another Kshatriya has seized a woman like that in this marriage by kidnapping, they will never accept such a woman as charity. In fact, if a woman has been in the company of another man in Vedic culture, she's anyway considered unmarriable by anyone else. So he refused. So then she went back to Bhishma and said, I've been refused by the husband that I chose, so there's only you left. I consider that you are the only suitable husband for me because you're so powerful. You kidnapped me, so you should marry me. And Bhishma said, no, I've taken this vow of brahmacharya. So then she said, all right, then I swear I will be the cause of your death, if not in this life, some future life. So she came back as the warrior Sikandi. So Bhishma, he knew all this. So he considered her not a man. Or he considered Sikandi not a man, but a woman. Because So Sikandi, you see, he was in the consciousness of being Amba, although he was in a man's body, a Kshatriya's body. He had not forgotten his previous birth, and his vengeance was arising from that lifetime. So he was actually in this consciousness. So Bhishma considered, this is a woman, not a man. So he said, I'll never fight a woman on the battlefield. So Krishna, knowing this, he put Sikandi, he ordered that Sikandi be in the front, and all the great Pandava warriors be behind Sikandi. And they attacked Bhishma in this way. So Bhishma, he didn't fight, because Sikandi was in the front. And all the Pandava warriors, they fired their arrows into Bhishma, and that's how he ended up on this bed of arrows. Of course, he still left his body when he wanted to, but being so pierced with arrows, he couldn't fight anymore. So that's another example. Another example of how Krishna had the Pandavas break Dharma was that he had Yudhishthir tell this lie to Dronacharya that Ashwatthama is dead. Of course, Yudhishthir meant Ashwatthama, an elephant whom Bhima had killed. But this broke. You want to sit down, Maharaji? But this broke Dronacharya's heart, and he lost the will to fight, so he could be. And then also, Krishna had Ghatotkacha, who is the son of Bhima. He had him become the target of Karna. Had this weapon, Shakti, from Indra. So he had him, this Rakshasa son of Bhima, become the target. He fought so ferociously that Karna thought, I can only kill him with this weapon. So he threw it, and thus the Rakshasa son was killed. But then Karna had no weapon that was suitable to kill Arjuna anymore. So in these ways, Krishna did tricks. He played tricks, and he broke the rules of fair combat. And indeed, after the fight was over, and the Pandavas were victorious, then Gandhari, who is the mother of Duryodhana and the other 99, his other 99 brothers who were all killed on the battlefield, she remembered all these tricky dealings of Lord Krishna. And she became very, very angry. Actually, first of all, she was angry with the Pandavas because they had carried these tricks out. So she wanted to curse the Pandavas. And because she was such a chaste woman, she's the most chaste woman, you know, she blindfolded herself because her husband was blind. She was most chaste. And because of her chastity, she was very, very powerful. The Pandavas, well, they were never afraid of such warriors like Drona and Bhima and Duryodhana. They were afraid of her. So she was ready to curse them. And then Krishna, he stepped forward and he said, no, no, Mataji, calm down. And he reasoned with her. And then she held back her curse. But because her eyes were blindfolded, so she could see a little bit, you see, above and below the blindfold. So she happened to see Maharaj Yudhisthira's feet. And just by seeing them for a moment, his toes became scorched. They started to burn. She was so angry. And then when Arjuna saw this, you see, he jumped behind Krishna. He was so afraid of Gandhari that he jumped behind Krishna. And what happened was, is that Gandhari cursed Krishna. See, so this is the extent. When Krishna says, I will protect you, do not fear. This is an example of the extent that Krishna took Gandhari's curse upon himself. And it is said from this curse that Krishna's dynasty, they destroyed themselves in that drunken brawl, and Krishna and Balaram, they left the world. Of course, Krishna said at the time, Mataji, you can't curse me. But this gives me a good idea of how how I will have the Yadu dynasty exit from this world. So thank you very much. So actually Krishna, he acknowledged her curse by arranging it in that way. But this just gives an example. Krishna took that curse, which was originally meant for the Pandavas, upon himself, rather than see the Pandavas take it. So this is how Krishna protects his devotees. Other methods of religion cannot deliver one from the root of sin, because they are essentially man-centered, not God-centered. We've discussed this already. The root of sin is our very lack of surrender to Krishna. This unsurrendered attitude manifests in man-centered religions as the portrayal of God as mankind's order supplier. Quote from Srila Prabhupada, therefore Krishna says, first of all surrender, then try to understand. This is the point of that verse. Huh? The point of this Sarvadharma Parichaja is first you surrender and then I'll give you the knowledge. Don't worry about trying to develop the knowledge first. Sarvadharma Parichita Mamikam Shananambraja Ahamtam Sarvapopya But Moksha Ishami. When you surrender, and by that surrendering process, when you are free from the resultant action of sinful activities, then you can appreciate God, not that God is my order supplier. The man-centered religion is very childish. The example is of children, their relationship with their parents. You know, there are religions. prominent religions which say God is the Father. So the relationship of children with father and mother is that, you know, gimme, gimme, gimme. They're always demanding the parents supply them. And when there's some fight between the children, then the children go to the parents and they accuse each other. He hit me first. You see? And however the parents respond, you know, if they punish one and help the other, then the one who is punished hates the parents then. That wasn't fair. He hit me first. You see, this is the way. It's so centered on themselves. So they actually never appreciate their parents as their parents actually are. You know, they never really appreciate that the parents have their own lives, have their own activities, their own pastimes. They just think the parents are there for me. Spoiled children. I heard one devotee explaining this, that when this was Sridayananda Maharaj, he said that he can remember his parents used to once in a while, they would tell their children, look, we've been taking care of you for many, many weeks now, but this night we want to go, you know, meet our relatives. We want to have one night to ourselves. So we're going out, you stay at home. And he said all the time, whenever they would go out, we'd get in a fight and we'd call up our parents, wherever they were. And we'd all be on the phone crying, you have to come back here. He hit me. So the children, you know, they can't understand that the parents should have their own life. So similarly, these man-centered religions, they actually have no interest in the pastimes of Krishna. In fact, that would make them very afraid. You know, that what this Krishna goes out in the forest with gopis and enjoys. What about me? What if I say a prayer at that time? And he's dancing with the gopis. Then he won't hear it. You see, he'll be too busy. That's not the kind of God I want to worship. I want a God who's just sitting up there, has nothing else to do except listen to me. You see, now I need a new refrigerator. Oh, my computer broke. Send me another one. You see, this is the kind of God they want. Who is their servant. So this is the exact opposite of the message of this verse. Krishna is saying, surrender to me. You give up your own plans. Just surrender to me. Here's another quote from Prabhupada. Sarvadharma parichaja mamikam sharanam braja. You have manufactured so many rascaldom in the name of religion. Give up all this nonsense. Simply surrender unto me. This is wanted. But Krishna knows that if I say to the rascal, surrender unto me, he'll take otherwise. You see, this is why this knowledge is so confidential. It's only for his devotees. As one requires no preliminary knowledge to surrender to Krishna, similarly one requires no preliminary purity or piety. Quote from Prabhupada. So without being pavitra, without being pious, without being free from contamination of material activities, nobody can approach Krishna. That's a fact. But Krishna is so kind that he orders that even if you got some kamana, some desire, material desire, still if you take shelter upon me, sarvadharma parichaja, you do not take shelter of anything else. Simply depend upon me. Sarvadharma parichaja mamikam sharanam braja. You haven't got to depend on anything else. I will give you protection. So we have to take faith in the words of Krishna and pitch our complete faith and devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 9:32, O son of Prita, those who take shelter of me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, and Shudras, can attain the supreme destination. And here's another verse, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 14, Text 18. This is from the Uddhava Gita. My dear Uddhava, if my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be harassed by material desires. But because of his unflinching devotion for me, he will not be defeated by sense gratification. So continuing on, the process of surrender to Krishna, this is from the purport. The process of surrender to Krishna is described in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Anukulesa sankalpa pratikulasya varjanam rakshishatiti vishvasho gupta vevarnam tata atmanikshepa karpanye sadvida sharanagati. So you recall yesterday, 1865, Gita Rahasya, it was explained how the four items mentioned in that verse, which are manmana, always think of me, madbhakta, become my devotee, madyaji, you always worship me, and namaskuru, offer your obeisances or offer your respects to me. Prabhupada, we gave some quotes from Srila Prabhupada. which showed how these four are actually the nine processes of bhakti yoga, which are condensed. They're indicating the nine processes, but they've been condensed into four very essential processes. So in the same way, this verse where Krishna says, just surrender to me, implicit here are the six symptoms of surrender, which are the devotee has to accept everything that is favorable for the rendering of transcendental loving service to the Lord. Secondly, he must reject everything unfavorable to the Lord's service. This is also called renunciation. Thirdly, a devotee must be firmly convinced that Krishna will give him protection. No one else can actually give one protection. And being firmly convinced of this is called faith. This kind of faith is different from the faith of an impersonalist who wants to merge into the Brahman effulgence in order to benefit by cessation of repeated birth and death. A devotee wants to remain always in the Lord's service. In this way, Krishna is merciful to his devotee and gives him all protection from the dangers found on the path of devotional service. This is a very wonderful point. That by surrendering to Krishna as Krishna's devotee, this does not necessarily mean that one will leave this material world, at least not right away. Krishna may have some duty for us in the material world. Just like we mentioned the Pandavas, they're all liberated souls, but Krishna had some duty for them. So therefore they had to come down with Krishna and they had to undergo so many tribulations, so much suffering. They were exiled for 12, all the whole story of Mahabharata. But at every step of the way, Krishna protected them. So this is the meaning of protection. It's not this impersonalistic idea that you just, go into the closet of Brahman. The door is locked and you're safe there. You can hide under a blanket. No one will see you. It's not like that. Protection means, no, act for Krishna, even in this material world. And even be faced with so much opposition, so much trial and tribulation, but at every step of the way, Krishna will protect us. Going on, the fourth symptom of surrender is the devotee should accept Krishna as his supreme maintainer and master. He should not think that he is being protected by a demigod. He should depend only on Krishna, considering him the only protector. The devotee must be firmly convinced that within the three worlds, he has no protector or maintainer other than Krishna. Five, self-surrender means remembering that one's activities and desires are not independent. The devotee is completely dependent on Krishna and he acts and thinks as Krishna desires. And lastly, number six, the devotee is meek and humble. So again, returning to the purport, one should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. His name is Krishna because he is all-attractive. One who becomes attracted by the beautiful, all-powerful, omnipotent vision of Krishna is fortunate. There are different kinds of transcendentalists. Some of them are attached to the impersonal Brahman vision. Some of them are attracted to the super soul feature, etc. But one who is attracted to the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and above all, one who is attracted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna himself, is the most perfect transcendentalist. In other words, devotional service to Krishna in full consciousness is the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. So unreserved surrender to Krishna is the method of devotion of the gopis, who are the most perfect transcendentalists. From Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 12, verses 13 to 15, Sri Krishna says, "All those hundreds and thousands of gopis, understanding me to be their most charming lover, and ardently desiring me in that way, were unaware of my actual position. Yet by intimately associating with me, the gopis attained me, the Supreme Absolute Truth. Therefore, my dear Uddhava, abandon the Vedic mantras, as well as the procedures of supplementary Vedic literatures, and their positive and negative injunctions. Disregard that which has been heard, and that which is to be heard. Simply take shelter of me alone, for I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, situated within the heart of all conditioned souls. Take shelter of me wholeheartedly, and by my grace, be free from fear in all circumstances." So Krishna's invitation to the living entities to surrender to him under his full protection is the expression of his own unreserved love for his eternal parts and parcels. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. Krishna loves us more than we love him. We do not love him, but Krishna loves. Krishna loves every living being. He says, Sarva Yonishu Kaunteya Sambhavanti Mutayo Yaha. Every living being, whatever form he is, that doesn't matter. I am the Bija Pradapita, I am the seed-giving father. So the father is always affectionate to the sons. The sons may forget the father, but the father cannot forget. So Krishna comes here out of his love for us, to deliver us, to give us the right path. Sarva Dharmam Parichaja, my dear sons, why are you rotting in this material world? You come to me, I'll give you all protection. You are the son of the Supreme, so you can enjoy life very supremely, very magnificently, without any death. Why are you rotting? That is Krishna's mercy. And in this verse, 1866, Krishna is inviting the living entities to enter into an intimate, loving relationship with him. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. Everyone has prema, love. This propensity to love others, that is, there is everywhere. But that prema, that love, is originally for Krishna. Nitya Siddha Krishna Bhakti, that is the original prema. But because we are illusion, that prema is being applied or used for so many maya. Prema I have got my love, that is a fact. But I do not know where to repose that love. This is my misfortune. Therefore Krishna says that Sarva Dharmam Parichaja Mamikam Sharanam Raja. You have got prema, you apply it to me, then you'll be benefited. Prema is already there, you are simply misusing it. Therefore you are not happy. This is the process. Prema you have got, but you are misusing it. But if you take Krishna's word that give your prema unto me, so that's where this quote ends. Anyway, Prabhupada is making it clear that this is the way one develops Krishna prema, by surrendering to the Lord without reservation. So we can summarize this Charan Shloki and also the Gita Rahasya by citing this verse from 11th Canto, chapter 11, text 33. Krishna says, my devotees may or may not know exactly what I am, who I am, and how I exist. But if they worship me with unalloyed love, then I consider them to be the best of devotees. So, here, knowledge is not taken to be very important by Krishna. What is important is unreserved surrender and loving devotion. And then Krishna, as we've already heard, supplies all knowledge to the devotee. But, yes, this is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 11, Text 33. My devotees may or may not know exactly what I am, who I am, and how I exist. But if they worship me with unalloyed love, then I consider them to be the best of devotees. But it must be also pointed out that Krishna is not asking us to surrender to him in some ignorant, sentimental way. The process of surrendering to Krishna, as we've already heard, we've already learned in the Chatu Shloki, it begins by associating with Krishna's devotees, hearing from them about Krishna. So this is how one can learn how to surrender to Krishna. It is only possible through Krishna's devotees. So by hearing from Krishna's devotees, then one gets knowledge of how to properly surrender to him. So this is an important point, because there are many upstarts, these apasampradayas, these bogus so-called Vaishnavas, who claim that they have love of Krishna, they have surrendered to Krishna fully. They don't care for rules and regulations. They don't care for social opinion. They're just acting in pure love. And this pure love means to them, it simply elicits sex. They have this understanding of rasa, that the bhava of Krishna, of Radha and Krishna, enters some ordinary embodied man and woman. And then they have rasa-lila together. And this way they enter into the confidential pastimes of Krishna. And if someone says, this is nonsense, this is illicit sex, they say, Sarva Dharmam Parichaja. Krishna says, just surrender to him. So this is bogus. This is not the proper method of surrender. So therefore, Prabhupada, I wanted to make this point at the end, because the question might come up that, you know, this verse, Bhagavad Gita 1866, it was recited by Ramananda Roy to Lord Chaitanya in their conversation, and Lord Chaitanya rejected it. So someone may say, if this verse is so important, then why Lord Chaitanya did not accept it? And this is the answer. I'll read what Srila Prabhupada says about this. So as I told you, Ramananda Roy, the discussion between Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Roy proposed different steps of spiritual advancement. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, this is good, but this is external. It is not very effective. Even sarva dharma parichaja mamekam sharanam raja. That also, Lord Chaitanya said, it is also not effective. It is not effective for these gokaras. Gokara means cow and ass class of man. Otherwise it is effective. But in the beginning they cannot. Otherwise in the Bhagavad Gita it is plainly said, sarva dharma parichaja mamekam. Who's taking it? Nobody's taking it. Therefore it is not effective for the gokaras. It is effective for one who is actually a human being, but they are not human being. They are all rascals, gokaras. Therefore, it is not effective. If you instruct a dog, my dear dog, please surrender to Krishna, what will he do? So similarly, human being who does not surrender, he is no better than the dog. What is the difference between the dog and this human being? Gokaras, the cats, the dogs, they cannot do it. And if you human beings, they cannot also, then what is the difference? Ahara nidra baya maitinam cha samanyam etad pashubir naranam. Simply eating, sleeping, sex life, and defending. These are common things of the cats and dogs and the human beings. The human being is specially benefited when he surrenders to Krishna. Otherwise, he is cat and dog. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that these cats and dogs, they are so degraded, they cannot understand what is the meaning of surrendering to Krishna. They cannot understand. Therefore, he said, Eho baya age kaha ara. This is external. Please speak more, something effective. So that which Lord Chaitanya accepted as effective was Ramananda Roy's statement from the Srimad Bhagavatam that one should simply hear from the devotees of the Lord. So this is where true surrender begins. One has to hear, one has to learn the science of Krishna consciousness from the devotees and under their direction surrender. Otherwise, if one just does it thinking, oh, Krishna is so merciful, he says surrender. So, Krishna, I surrender to you. You see, and then, but in practical life, he's just going on with eating, sleeping, mating, defending material activities. Then this is, as Prabhupada said, rascaldom. So I will stop here. Question, yes?
You were saying how God is almighty, big and good. This will not help us if you love Godhead. Which makes sense. And Krishna himself is saying, if it's only just a vague idea of who I am and how I'm existing, if he loves me, then he's the best of you. So how...
Krishna didn't say vague idea. Krishna said one may not exactly know what I am, who I am, and so on. That's exactly what it means. It means like the gopis who just took Krishna as their most beloved. They were not thinking of him as the origin of all the universes. All the residents of Vrindavan. Prabhupada once said in a lecture that sometimes when Krishna would do something wonderful in Vrindavan, kill some big demon, then the residents of Vrindavan, they would pause and they would discuss, who could this Krishna really be? And someone would say, well, maybe he's a demigod. I say, maybe he's the incarnation of some demigod. And someone else would say, maybe he's even Lord Narayan. And then Nanda Maharaj would say, whether demigod or Narayan, he is my son. So, these devotees who have this wonderful love of Krishna, who are fully surrendered to Krishna, they're not very much interested in all the Vedantic conclusions about the personality of Godhead. But they know Krishna. They have this specific love and devotion for Krishna. this stage of this vague religiosity is that is very, very preliminary. It's just it's a process to make people who are very unqualified in every way gradually, you know, at least on the material platform, develop some kind of intelligence so that they can understand more by restricting them in their sinful activity. So therefore God is, you know, God is up there somewhere, he throws down thunderbolts, he makes earthquakes happen, he'll become very angry if you do this sin or that sin, so follow these commandments. And this way they become a little purified, a little more intelligent, they can understand more later on. Yes?
I have a question, because all the jiva tattvas are equal on the spiritual platform, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And could you explain me the aspect of individuality? How is it possible to be equal and at the same moment individual? How does it work in the spiritual world that we are individual and equal?
Yeah, well, the equality means is in reference to material existence. In spiritual existence, there is also gradation of souls, but it is on the absolute platform. Therefore, it is understood that all these souls are equal because they all have relationship with Krishna. And for each one of these souls, that relationship that they have, constitutional relationship, it may be a relationship of servant or of friend or of parent or of lover, like that, these rasas. But for each one of these living entities in those relationships, that relationship is perfect.